We are going to be discussing a very interesting, fascinating, complicated, and painful question that goes as follows. Unfortunately, the stockpile of monoclonal antibody infusions has been currently running very low here in New York State, and the hospitals are now faced with a very, very difficult question. You see, many people are getting sick, and they could certainly benefit from this infusion medically, but there simply are not enough to go around for everyone. And New York State has made a recommendation that the infusions should be granted when we have to make a triage, when we have to make a decision. The preference should be given to the person who is unvaccinated because their COVID conditions could be far worse and far more intense than those who have been vaccinated over the last couple of months or year. Now, the ethical dilemma with that recommendation is something that should be obvious to all of us. You're ostensibly punishing all of the people who were acting responsibly and vaccinating themselves based on the mainstream medical recommendation that all of us have heard over the past year, and we are rewarding the anti-vaxxers, and we are encouraging the people that don't vaccinate yourself and don't worry about it, because should you get sick, we not only will treat you, but we will give you preferential treatment over the people who have been vaccinated. Now, obviously, this is not including people who the doctors have told not to be vaccinated for medical reasons. They have no choice. They can't act otherwise. They have to hold back from getting the vaccination. But we're talking about people who made a decision not to be vaccinated versus those who made a decision that she should be. Now both of them show up in the hospital, and the one who's going to be given the treatment is potentially the person who acted completely irresponsibly and in a reckless fashion. Now that is a very, very difficult ethical dilemma. At the same time, were we to conclude that it would be appropriate to overlook those people and to give the infusion to the one who acted responsibly and did the right thing and got vaccinated, let's extend that to an extreme scenario that goes way beyond the times that we're living in today. Say, for example, you have an ICU, which only has one bed left that is available at the current time. You know, there are many people who are sick in the neighborhood. And you have two cancer patients who are currently undergoing serious treatment and who need to be put into the ICU. Would we say that we should overlook the patient who has been a chain smoker for the last 35 years of his life and therefore brought about his own cancer and now is dying from his lung cancer? We should overlook that patient because there's somebody else who did not cause their own illness to set in? That's a very difficult and dangerous precedent to set. And how far would we take it? Let's say you have somebody who has medical complications due to obesity or impulsive eating habits that brought about all of these unhealthy tendencies that now present themselves in a very serious medical condition. Would we say that that person should be in the back of the line to somebody else? It sounds a little bit insane to say such a thing, but at the same time, maybe it makes a lot of sense. So this has very, very far-reaching consequences, whatever the answer to this is. Let's try to delve into this issue. Let's try to understand a little bit what the issues and the factors involved actually are. I don't yet have a conclusion, I have to confess, that this was a question that was presented to me last Thursday evening, late at night, by a doctor in Lawrence. I actually mentioned it to Rabbi Glatt over Shabbos, and he said, oh yeah, an interesting question. And then on Sunday he called, he's like, actually, this is relevant now in my hospital as well. We also have to come to a decision, and I am on the ethical committee. And subsequently, there was a third doctor who reached out and asked the same question. So there is no conclusion that I'm familiar with yet. I have heard this question from three different doctors and three different medical establishments. I have been dealing with this in real time. I've spoken to my father and to Rav Asher Weiss both every single day this week discussing this issue. Both of them felt that it's an extremely weighty question and one that needs very careful consideration and a lot of Yishuv Hadas. So I'm just inviting you to appreciate the halachic process and to understand what it is that goes into even dealing with such a question. Some of it you might be familiar with. A lot of it, I assume, you probably are not. And it's something that I think is extremely fascinating just to gain an appreciation for. So when dealing with any shaila of pikuach nefesh in general, one has to think about a basic and very fundamental question. And this really speaks to the underpinnings of the mitzvah of hatzalas nefashos. Obviously, what we're dealing with here is something that is extremely painful. And it's something that, as mentioned, we're discussing a topic that is terrifying. We didn't think we would be back in a place where we'd have to talk about triage with medical treatments. But unfortunately, that's where we are. And we have an obligation to go ahead and deal with the question as it comes up. Now, we have a general obligation to save lives. This obligation is something that is not limited to medical professionals. It's an obligation that we all share. It's something that all of us have to do. Are we in a position, if we are in a position to help somebody and to save their life, even if I happen not to be a medical professional, but I have something that I can provide to enhance their life, I have to do so. So that obligation is something that spans, one second, that is something that spans to all types of individuals. In fact, the Rambam writes, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes this, the halacha, if somebody kills a goses, you have somebody who's on their deathbed, and it seems, al pi derech hateva, there's no way to save them. All the systems are failing, everything seems to be going downhill, there's no way to turn it around, there's no way to reverse that condition. You are not allowed to kill such a person. So much so that the Shulchan Aruch says, ha-horeges ha-goses is chayv misa. It's the same as killing anybody else, a healthy person. You don't have a right to make such a decision to kill even a person who is in the end stages of life. We have an obligation to save a life, whether it's somebody who's young, somebody who's vibrant, somebody who's healthy and energetic and active, or somebody who perhaps is very old and at the very other end of the spectrum, who is really vulnerable and anemic, somebody who is not able to tend to themselves. We have an obligation. Now, what happens when somebody is having a tremendous amount of suffering and great discomfort? Would the rules change a little bit if they're being tormented from the illness that they have and we are now prolonging that suffering? That is a very important question, a very delicate and sensitive one that is discussed by Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman and many other achronim. And it's very specific to the set of circumstances that that individual patient is undergoing, so it's not worth getting into the discussion now, again, especially that it's not so relevant to what we're describing in particular. So when dealing with any shayla pikuach nafashos, you have to think about one basic fundamental question before you even get started, and that is something that really speaks to the underpinnings of the mitzvah of hatzalas nafashos. What is the nature of this mitzvah? We have many different mitzvahs that we are interacting with throughout our experience as Jews. We have mitzvah sheben adam lamakom, tefillah, right? We daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We keep Shabbos, that's between us and the Ribono Shel Olam. We have other mitzvahs which are ben adam lachavero, between ourselves and another human being. Chesed, tzedakah, all of those issues are things that are not relevant so much to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's relevant between us and humanity and other individuals. So when we talk about the mitzvah of Hatzalas Nefashos, is this something that we are supposed to be careful about because we believe, the reason why we're supposed to be involved in saving lives, because we appreciate the sanctity of life? Is it because we appreciate the gravity of life? It's Bein Adam LaMakom, it's between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribono Shel Olam wants us to appreciate that He gave life, and therefore we have a communal obligation to uphold that sanctity. Or is the nature of the obligation that I'm supposed to be nice to other people, I'm supposed to give tzedakah to other people, I should do chesed to other people? Is there a greater chesed than to save somebody's life? And that's the nature of the obligation. It's nothing to do with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's all focused on the fact that I have an obligation, bein adam lachavero, to another human being. Now you'll say, it's a nice, interesting, fascinating question, but what's the difference? Either way, I have an obligation to save a life as best to my ability as I can. So who cares if it's bein adam lachavero or bein adam lamakom? Well, a major difference might be, does an individual have a right to make their own preferential decisions about how they would like to be treated? If you say that it's bein adam lachaver, it's between me and my doctor, so then I can make potentially certain decisions that are very individual to my situation, to what I want. On the other hand, if it's between me and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's up to us to uphold the sanctity of life, then what does it matter that I happen to be the patient? It's a mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us as a community to uphold life, and this individual patient should not be a relevant party in the discussion. So we look at a Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin. And the Gemara has a very fascinating conversation there, where the Gemara tells us on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph as follows. What happens if I'm walking by a swimming pool, and I see that somebody is Toveya Benahar? I see that somebody, unfortunately, has fallen into the pool. Now, I happen to be a lifeguard, so I can jump in. I'm not jeopardizing my life by jumping in. I know how to save people from a swimming pool. So how do I know that I have an obligation to jump in? So the Gemara says, well, we learn that from the fact that the Torah says, Lo samod al dam reyecha. You see somebody whose life is in danger, you can't just ignore it. I have an obligation to jump in, to get involved, and to try to do whatever I can to help that person. As the Torah says, Lo samod al dam reyecha. Okay. The Gemara then asks a follow-up question. Why do I need a pasuk of Lo Samar Adam Reyecha? Don't we have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda? The mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda means if somebody loses an object, I have to give it back to them. So the Gemara says, if I have to give back your wallet if I find it, certainly I have to give back your life if I find it. So I find your life in the bottom of the pool, Rahman al-Itzlan, and I have an opportunity to give you back your life. Should that be less than me giving you back your wallet? If I have to give your wallet back, or your car that was stolen, or something that's lost, obviously I have to give you back your life that's about to be lost. So the Gemara says, we should learn this from the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Because the Gemara connects the mitzvah of Hatzelas Nefashos to Hashavas Aveda, there are a number of Achronim, a number of major poskim who say, tremendous chidushim lahalacha, because of that association with Hashavas Aveda. Take for example, Reb Shlomo Kluger, who was one of the great Gedolim in Galicia in the early 19th century, he draws that parallel between saving a life and Hashavas Aveda. And he says, just like by Hashavas Aveda, we are told, if it's a zaken ve'eno lefi chavodo. For example, the example my father always gave us in Shir was, if I'm walking down the street and I find a women's bathing suit. Now, I'm sure that woman is going to be very upset that she lost her clothing, but would it be respectable of me to walk down the streets with this bathing suit, knocking on every door, asking, did you lose this? It doesn't make sense. It's beneath my dignity to do that. It doesn't mean that I don't respect the woman who it belongs to, but it means that it's disrespectful to me to have to do that. That's just a very simple example, but the Gemara says, if you're faced with a situation where it's just humiliating to you to return this, you don't have to do that. You don't have to return it. So, says the Rav Shlomo Kluger, what would be the halacha if it's humiliating to me to be involved in saving this life? Would I have to lower myself? It's funny to even say such a thing. Would I have to lower myself to save the life, or would you say no? It's the same as Hashavas Aveda. Just like by Hashavas Aveda, I don't have to lower or compromise my dignity to save somebody's lost item, so too by Pikuach Nefashos. If it's beneath me to take care of this, I don't have to do it. And he concludes that it would be the same as Hashavas Aveda. Tremendous chiddush. If you think that's a chiddush, listen to the chiddush of the Minchas Chinuch. Minchas Chinuch overlapped with Reb Shlomo Kluger. They lived around the same time. They passed away within 5 or 10 years of each other in the late 1800s. So the Minchas Chinuch writes, say, for example, I have a situation where somebody takes their wallet and throws it into the middle of the highway. Deliberately. They choose to do that. Do I have to return their wallet to them? What do you say? No. Why? Hashavas Aveda means if I lose something, somebody should go out of their way to return it. If I actively destroy something, it's up for the taking. Too bad. You destroyed your own property? I don't have to save it. You should have thought about that before you did it. Now you regret it? Too bad. So there's no din of Hashavas Aveda when I'm at fault for the object being lost, for the object being destroyed. Says the Minchas Chinuch, so if somebody decides that they are going to destroy their life, writes the Minchas Chinuch, there's a parallel between Hashavas Aveda and the mitzvah of Hatzelas Nefashos. If I actively engaged in trying to destroy my own life, we as a community do not have an obligation to save you. Why? Because it's the same as Hashavas Aveda. Now again, this is a whopper of a chiddush. And that would mean that if somebody comes into the hospital because they've done something completely reckless to their own health, completely irresponsible, maybe you'll say the doctor shouldn't treat them. That's what the Minchas Chinuch concludes, that we wouldn't have to do so. Now again, this is not conclusive at all. There are a number of major achronim who say these kinds of ideas. But at the same time, one simply cannot say that we will choose not to help those individuals. We know that that's not the case, and we know that's not the way we paskin. And although there are certain parallels between Hashavas Aveda and Hatzalas Nefashos, it is not a linear parallel at all. We don't assume that they are exactly the same. They are not to be connected to one another entirely. And therefore, we would say that even if somebody was reckless and irresponsible, but I have the opportunity to help them out now, so we forget about what happened in the past, and we just look at what's in front of us now. If there's a situation of pikuach nefashos, and I can help, so I have to do whatever I can. There was a similar question that was discussed. I would say many people asked this, many people wondered it, or many people were too embarrassed to say it out loud. I was one of those people who was too embarrassed to tell anybody that this is what I was thinking. But there were many individuals who were very, very gravely ill in our community and in other communities because they were completely reckless about COVID regulations. I'm not talking about now. I'm talking when things were really very, very serious and they were choosing to disregard all of the recommendations that the medical community was making, and they absolutely refused to do anything that responsible people were doing. And then there were big chats going out. You should say Tehillim for this individual. I didn't have the gall to express to anybody how I felt when I got those messages, but my gut reaction was, you know, along with this, there should be an asterisk on the bottom that says, I acted irresponsibly. If you act like me, you'll end up in the ICU like I am. And if you don't vaccinate, you're probably going to end up in the same place that I was a few weeks ago. And then maybe the community should daven for you. Maybe I'm just a very rude person, and that's the way I thought. But I had very mixed feelings when I saw all of these messages. People are really sick. Yeah, how'd they get sick? We all know why they got sick. We all know what happened. We all know why their lives are now in jeopardy and in danger. Should I be davening for a person who brought about their own illness, who could have done lots of things to prevent this and chose not to? We're not talking about somebody who did nothing wrong. We're talking about somebody who was totally reckless and irresponsible. Again, a similar question. So there's actually a Gemara in Erevin where the Gemara tells a story that the Chazal said that it's dangerous to bite into some kind of vegetable. Why? Because the snakes like to eat these vegetables, and maybe if you bite into it, you're going to eat a snake, and then the snake's going to bite you, whatever, something like that. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Chanina decided that he was going to disregard the medical advice of the other contemporaries of his at the time, and he decided he was going to eat the vegetable even though everybody suggested that he don't. And lo and behold, he bites into it. There happened to be a snake inside. The snake bit him, and he ends up in the hospital. And his life is in danger, and his friends are having this discussion. Well, what should we do? Should we teach him a lesson and let him die? Or should we say that, no, you know, actually, he's a pretty significant personality. Reb Chanina is actually one of the major players in the Beis Medrash. He's one of the major personalities of our generation. So Rabim Tzrichim Lo, a lot of people are relying on him, so maybe we should daven that he should be okay. So the Gemara actually has this discussion. Anyway, fascinating conversation, but it's relevant to this discussion as well. The bottom line is, it leads us to the next part of our question, and that is that if we argue that both patients, in fact, deserve equal treatment, both of them should be treated, even if a person did something irresponsible beforehand, doesn't give us the right to ignore them or disregard their condition as it is now, how would we prioritize? The bottom line is we don't have enough treatments for everyone. So what are you supposed to do? How do you triage in a situation like this? It's a very important question, and we look at a Gemara Maseches Horius, where the Gemara tells us that there is a whole list of considerations that you should keep in mind. And it's not the considerations that I would have thought of on my own. I would have said, who's more sick, who's less sick? Who has a higher possibility of getting better if we give them a treatment and who not? Maybe who has more years to live and who doesn't? I would have taken all of these things into account. The Gemara says no. Kohen comes before a Levi. A Levi comes before a Yisrael. A Yisrael comes before a Mamzer. A Mamzer comes before a Ger. This one comes before the other. And this is a mystifying Gemara. What relevance does it have that somebody's a Kohen over the fact that somebody else is a Levi? What's the difference? Why should a Kohen come first? A Kohen is more important. Maybe the Levi is more important. And this is a very, very mysterious Gemara. Very hard to understand why these groupings should be at all relevant outside of getting an Aliyah and Shul. Who cares if you're a Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, Mamzer? In the end of the day, we're all human beings, and we should all have equal opportunity at life. And why should it matter at all whether I am from this category or this classification or the other? But that is what the Gemara says. Now, what is very surprising is, if this is such a black and white sugya in the Gemara, and the Gemara tells us that, you know, men and women have a priority, and Kohen Levi has a priority, and Yisrael and a Mamzer, if that's the case, it should be surprising to us that there's no mention of this in the Rambam. How does the Rambam leave it out? Such an important halacha. Not only the Rambam, the Tur, which is really the background of all of Shulchan Aruch, doesn't make mention of this either. So how can that be? It's a Gemara that's expressed quite clearly without anybody who disagrees, and yet it doesn't appear in the Rambam. It does not appear in the Tur. The Shulchan Aruch brings it in very backhandedly. It's like quoted in the Ramah, stuck into something else, not where it belongs. This is very strange. And Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that even though we have a Gemara that tells us the list of priorities and how you're supposed to triage, writes Rav Moshe, even with that list, Tzarech Iyun Gadol, you really need to look into it very carefully and figure out why should that list be relevant? Why should I pay attention to the status of an individual in the community and whether he's a Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, man or woman? Rav Moshe comes to the conclusion that it's practically impossible to implement that list that the Gemara has. Rav Moshe says, we're talking about a situation where two people show up in the hospital at the exact same time, and I didn't yet take a prognosis of either of them, and I look at both of them and I say, wow, you both look like you have exactly the same issue, and I'm going to treat both of you equally because I'm here to take care of everybody. Like, it's impossible. So Rav Moshe says, we basically have disregarded this whole hierarchy that the Gemara gives, and Rav Moshe says that the bottom line is that we have an obligation to serve any patient that comes into our office, anybody that we have the opportunity to save. Let's say you have a major accident. You don't go to the scene of the crime and say, oh, one second, before we treat anybody, can you take out your identification card? I want to see, are you a Kohen, Levi, Israel, man, woman, mamzer? One second, who are your parents? Were they married legitimately? They weren't? Says Rav Moshe, it's insane. You can't act like that. That's not a way to deal with an emergency situation. And Rav Moshe says, although we have a Gemara that tells us the list of priorities, we do not follow it. Now that's a very interesting and brave response of Rav Moshe, but that's what he writes very clearly. The Nishmas Avram, which is really like the Bible of medical ethics, it was written by Dr. Abraham. And Dr. Abraham writes in the Nishmas Avram that although it's true that the Gemara does tell us the list of priorities, he said, I've been around many hospitals, and Domani, he says, it seems to me, She'en Ogim Kein, seems to me that nobody follows this priority. And Bederach Klal, he says, in the normal course of events, we go based on a system. We have a system of how it works. You sign in, and whichever patient has the priority is the one who showed up or made the appointment first, whatever it might be. V'chala kodem zacha, he says, that's the way it goes. Reb Shlomo Zalman writes the same thing, and he says, the priority that we need to give has to be based on more important factors than Kohen Levi Yisrael. And Reb Shlomo Zalman writes in a tshuva that it should be based on the degree of severity of illness. Shlomo Zalman says you have to take in the possibility of how much positive outcome there could be from giving such a treatment. Is it actually going to help? Maybe it won't really help that much if we do this intervention, so maybe the other person should get it. But he says you have to take in medical considerations. You should not be taking into consideration what the Gemara says of Kohen Levi Yisrael. Again, just a fascinating point, a lot more to say about that. But here we have a Gemara, and the Achronim of our generation have completely disregarded the hierarchy and the triage that the Gemara describes. Now, this was very heavily debated in March and April of 2020. Why? Because there was a major shortage of ventilators at the time, unfortunately, as we know. Turns out, many argue that the ventilators are what made it worse for some people. Okay, I don't know, I'm not in the profession. Dr. Booth can tell us later. I know he's shaking his head, I'm sorry. But there's a lot to say. I'm not overstepping my capacity here. But there was a major shortage, and a major question that was asked then is, how do we prioritize ventilators, and who should get it and who should not? At the time, my father wrote a lot about this, and many other poskim, not many other, but some wrote about these issues. And at the time, my father pointed to a critical line in the Talmud Yerushalmi, where the Yerushalmi writes on Maseches Horius, when discussing this list of priorities, the Yerushalmi says that Sadron Kodam Lepalpalan, if I have two Talmidei Chachamim, and both of their lives are in danger, and I have the ability to save one of them, which one should I save? So the Gemara says, you should save the one who Rabin Tzrichon Lo B'Yoser, you should save the one who more people are going to benefit from. So if you have somebody who's a wild genius, but his thoughts are not clear, and he's not able to communicate those thoughts over to the public, obviously he or she might be a wonderful contribution to the community, and they might be a great personality. But in the end of the day, which one does the community need more? The Sadron, the person whose thoughts are organized, may not be the greatest genius, but knows how to give over messages to the community, knows how to lead, knows how to do things properly. That person would take priority. What my father took from that is, when you have a situation of triage, you need to think about who is more essential for the community to have, and who perhaps not. Now that's also sometimes a very, very complicated thing to answer. How do you know who's more essential and who's not? Sometimes the answer is very simple. Sometimes it's far more delicate and much more complicated. What I want to bring in here is one extra wrinkle to this issue. And I think this is the most fascinating part of the whole thing, because sometimes, you know, we live in a generation where people can look up anything online and find sources for anything they want to talk about. But Shimush Talmidei Chachamim has not become less important. When you have Shimush Talmidei Chachamim and you understand how the mind of a Talmud Chacham thinks and how they break down a question and where the sources are that they look, it's not always in the most obvious place that you might think. So you can do a Google search and look, where are you going to talk about this? You can search on Bar Ilan and Otzer HaChacham, but you may not come up with the answer because it's an answer that's found in a very distant place from where you may have thought. and where you may have considered to look. And I learned this many, many times in my life from being around my father and other great gedolim. But I remember 5 years ago, one of the times that Rav Asher Weiss's wife was in Sloan Kettering, so he was staying by our house, and I was back and forth with him every day. I was going to the hospital, bringing him different things, and his wife was in the ICU at the time, but his phone was still ringing all day and night, and people were still calling from Israel asking him all kinds of questions. And one day I came, often he would say to me, "Shai, when you come tonight, can you bring me this safe or that?" He didn't have a library in the hospital, so he said, "Can you make a copy of this? Can you make a copy of that? I'm writing a tshuva, I want to work on something." So one day I came to the hospital and he says, you're going to love this. I got a question today from somebody in Israel. And this person is an Orthodox Jew who was just nominated onto the commission that votes for the Sal HaBriyut. I don't know how often they make this recommendation, but here in the United States, as well as in Israel, they have the medicine basket. So the insurance companies have to make a determination what they're going to cover and what perhaps won't be covered. Insurance can't cover everything. So the insurance companies have to make a decision which interventions, which treatments they are going to pay for and which perhaps not. Now, who's going to make that decision? So this is a federal decision that's made by a commission of people who take in all kinds of considerations in mind, and they figure out what would be appropriate to be covered and what perhaps not. Now, this person was a religious Jew. His name was Rabbi Havlin, and he was nominated to this commission, and he says, as an Orthodox Jew who is a Torah observant Jew, what should my opinion B. What should I say? The most valuable ticket item in all of Yiddishkeit is that pikuach nefesh is the most important thing over and above everything else. Now, if that's the case, do I vote that 100% of the money should go toward life-saving interventions? So what happens, say, for example, if somebody breaks their leg? So we shouldn't cover physical therapy. We should say, you know, your life is not in danger, so you're going to have to live with the pain for the rest of your life. Too bad. And somebody who needs hearing aids, we should say, well, your life is fine. You may not be able to ever hear again. And if you want to, you can pay for the hearing aids. But we're not going to cover that. I mean, that would be absurd. How can we have a society that runs that way? But on the other hand, how do you take away money from a potential opportunity to save an extra life and give it towards somebody who broke their leg or needs a hearing aid? That also doesn't make sense. So that was an amazing question. So he turns to me and he says, so what do you think? I said, look, I don't get asked these questions. So we're going through the question, and he says, you know, let's think about it. Should we be measuring pediatrics versus geriatrics, right? Who should get more money? Where should we allocate more funds? Should we perhaps balance somebody who has an unusual illness where we're not sure whether or not we're actually going to be successful to save them? Or should we give all the money to common conditions that come up all the time and ones that we're more familiar with how to treat them successfully? Should we think about the success rate of each intervention and judge it based upon that factor? So this is an amazing question. And he said, you have to look through all of Shas to figure out where you're going to get an answer from. The problem is you're not going to find an answer in all of Shas, because this question was something that never dawned upon the Amoraim in the times of the Gemara. And I watched how in the span of 5 minutes, he scanned through the entire Shas in his head to come up with something that would be similar. So it's not just going through the pages of Shas, it's coming up with a sugya that is actually relevant to this case. And the reason why I find it's amazing is because when I called my father late Thursday night to discuss this issue with him, the first thing that came to his head as we were talking about it was that very same Gemara that Rav Asher Weiss had mentioned at the time that we were discussing about the medicine basket. So you see the way people think differently when they have a real understanding of all of Shas and all of Torah Shebaal Peh, they're able to approach an issue very differently than many of us otherwise would have. So the answer that they came up with is as follows. There is a Mishnah in Nedarim, fascinating Mishnah, very hard to understand, where the Mishnah tells us if you have two neighboring towns, one town has a drought, they have no water, and the people are going to die from a lack of water. They have nothing to drink. The next town over has enough water to drink, and also they have an excess of water that they're able to do the laundry. So they don't have enough water to water the plants, but they have enough water to do the laundry. Do they have an obligation to give up their laundry water in order that the town next door to them should be able to have drinking water to survive? That's the question that the Mishnah raises in Maseches Nedarim. And it turns out that it's a Machlokas Tanoim. That's absurd. How can that be a Machlokas Tanoim? My neighbors are going to drop dead because they don't have water to drink. I'm going to do my laundry while somebody else's life is in danger. Does that make sense? There's Pikuach Nefesh on the line. How can that be? So at the time he asked, how is it possible that there's an opinion in the Gemara that I'm allowed to save my water to do my laundry when I know that down the block there's somebody else who doesn't have water to drink? That doesn't sound like it makes sense. And he said the answer has to be that when you're dealing with a one-off Pikuach Nefesh, when you're dealing with an individual, yes, it's true. The only factor that you keep in mind is Pikuach Nefesh is the most important thing to keep in mind. But when you're dealing with an entire district, when you're dealing with a society, when you're dealing with an entire community, we have numerous other factors and considerations that we need to take into play. You can't have a functioning society without laundry. So does that mean that the consequence is going to be that the next town over is going to die? Yeah, perhaps. But we have a right to make that decision because our society cannot function without having clean clothing. But it's not Pikuach Nefesh. But the answer is Pikuach Nefesh. When you're dealing with a society, Pikuach Nefesh is not the only factor that you need to keep in mind. It's a whopper of a chiddush. It's amazing. And he said, based on that, if you apply it to this case here, the answer would be, you cannot have a society where everybody who breaks their leg or needs a hearing aid is not going to be treated, is not going to get medical coverage, is not going to get insurance to help them. It can't be. You're not going to have a society that way. A society has to function with all kinds of people, with all kinds of different situations, and we are going to be able to help different scenarios in different ways. We cannot allocate all our money only to the ICU and then the rest of the hospital goes out of business. That doesn't make sense. You can't have a functioning society that way. So it must be that when you have a larger community at play, you have to take in many other factors, and Pikuach Nefesh is not the only factor. Of course, it has to be an important one, but it cannot be the only one. So the question here is, when we have a society, and we are trying to live a healthy, productive society, how would you look at the community that is choosing to be anti-vaxxers and then are damaging themselves? And by damaging themselves, they're ultimately damaging those who are vaccinated because they can't get the treatments because there aren't enough. And they're being pushed to the back of the line. That's the question. Do we take Pikuach Nefesh as the only consideration? And if that's the case, then the New York State recommendation makes a lot of sense. Because the bottom line is, those people are far more at risk than the people who were vaccinated. We have to look out for people's lives. We have to save lives as much as we can. Well, then they're the ones that should get it because their lives are far greater in danger than anyone else's. On the other hand, if you look at societal considerations as a whole, are we now going to be promoting a community that should not be promoted? Are we now going to do something that has far-reaching consequences way beyond the question of Pikuach Nefesh? Is that something that we need to take into consideration? Again, as I mentioned, this is something that I do not have a conclusion for, but I think it's fascinating just to think through the halachic process and realize how many factors are at play when you deal with a shaila, not just the pikuach nefesh, when you deal with any question, how many things you need to keep in mind all at the same time and how many factors need to be weighed one against the other to come to a responsible halachic conclusion for any question that we would potentially have. So, Mirtz Hashem, we